Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm glad you could join me tonight. I would like to talk a little bit about a wonderful video that was sent to me today by some of my listeners and open the show on a really positive note. There's a coach that coaches basketball, and he has a young man who's always there sitting on the sidelines, and he's learning disabled, but he loves basketball, and it's always been his dream to be able to play basketball. So this one night, the coach resigns himself that no matter what, the end of the game, this young man's going to get a chance to play. So it all rolls around. He's given the young man a uniform, and that's made him ecstatic, just being able to wear the uniform. So we're in the last part of the game, and he calls the young man in, and he gets to shoot the last basket, and he misses several times. And no matter what they do and no matter how they set him up, he doesn't make a basket. But it's still, you know, the outpouring of love from the people that are gathered there to watch the basketball game, you can feel it even on the video. So then another young man from the other team yells out this young man's name, bounces him the ball, sets him up, and he makes a basket. And let me tell you something. If there was a dry eye in that stadium, I would be really surprised, because even sitting here in my office, so many miles away, and so much time has gone by since this actually took place, and I'm sitting here with tears streaming down my face. This is what we're capable of doing. And they interviewed the young man, and he said, I was brought up to be good to people, you know, to be nice, and to see when somebody, you know, really needs something, you should be there for them. Such a little thing. Such a little thing, and yet it made this young man's world everything. It was a beautiful. I messaged back the guys that sent it to me, and I said, wow, I really needed that today. It's proof positive that we are capable of doing anything and everything, and that's what we should be doing, anything and everything to make this world a better place. So, on that note, I would also like to talk a little bit about the fact that we spoke earlier this week about when kids get involved with gangs and things like that. So I'm going to bring Shelly in. Hi, Miss Shelly.
Hi, Reen. How are you doing, hon?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very good. That was an absolutely wonderful story.
I was already ecstatic over him just shooting the baskets. Who cares if he made a basket, right? But you know, isn't that? It's like, I don't know, like the perfect timing. The other kid throws the ball to him, and he turns around and shoots the basket like he'd been doing it all night long. It was just absolutely beautiful.
Right. Right.
But, you know, also today I watched a program about gangs in the streets of Chicago and New York, and I mentioned that earlier this week, some of the gangs and my own son's interest in a gang to feel safe. And my husband and I talked about it, and I said, you know, gangs are the big draw is for a lonely kid, a scared kid, a kid that doesn't think he has anybody. It's a way to have, like, a family, like their buddies. And I of course, went back to the lovely letter that I read last night about the woman who organized, you know, if you will, her daughter's own gang. I mean,
right.
They weren't a gang, but they were a bunch of girls who got together and have stayed together all these years and support each other. And so the daughter made it through school, even though nothing had changed in school. Nothing changed. She still got picked on because she was a little bit different from everybody else because of her likes and dislikes, and little things happened to her. But she no longer felt alone.
Right.
And I think that's the thing. You know, if you can say to yourself, it's all right, you know, I don't care. Pretty soon I'll be home. Pretty soon I'll be with mom and dad and my brother and my sister, or pretty soon I'll be at my girlfriend's house, or pretty soon I'll be at grandma's house or something. Something that doesn't make you feel like this isn't going to end because you have no way to, where to hide from it. So often that leads kids to a couple different things. One good thing, a couple good things, is it often leads them to church. It often brings them into a youth group. You know, there's always, you know, always lovely. I mean, Catholics have Catholic youth organization, and we have, you and I both have friends right around here whose kids are involved in church, and we have a very good friend whose son has gone places and done some wonderful work through the name of God and the church that he's involved with. And often that is a place where somebody who feels a little different or a little left out doesn't necessarily mean, I don't want the connotations of not a good mother and father, because mom and dad aren't really a part of that world for them a lot of times. There's safety there, quite often, but it's just not the same. And a lot of times kids don't share anything with mom and dad. That's another sad fact. But they can turn to church, and they can turn to the youth groups, and that's a good thing. And it makes, I would say, church is the most available and the most achievable thing for a kid to do if they're really feeling alone. So if you know somebody out there, even if you're not involved with a church, there's lots of organizations that have open hotlines and things like that for kids to call and become a part of. The second thing, as they get older, is the service. A lot of young people decide that they want to serve their country. And that, too, is a time of dedication, the learning of loyalty. You really can't be too judgmental in the service, not if you make it for the long haul. And it also makes you feel like you're a part of something. It gives you that sense of worth and that sense of importance that just can't be told to you. You have to feel that it's true. And we recently, one of the grandson's friends, who was a very lost young man, spent a lot of hours at our house. And he and my grandson grew apart a little bit because my grandson had a girlfriend and he didn't. And then he got a girlfriend and things changed a little bit. But then next thing I know, he's at the house telling us that he's joined the Marines. And he's dedicated himself. He looks like a picture of a Marine. And
wow.
He's so happy and he's so successful. And it put him in a place where he feels, you know, he recognizes his own self-worth now, which is a beautiful thing. Because it was always there, but
right.
But there was that feeling of being alone. I don't know. He couldn't embrace what he was worth. And now he can.
Right. Well,
I mean.
Well, you know the old cliche, you know, like when you share something good that happens to you, the joy that you get from that memory is double. And when you share something that was sad or hurtful with a friend or somebody that's important to you, it like cuts it in half. It makes it so much less than it started out just by being able to share it with somebody that you know cares back from you and that's interested in what you're telling them. So whether
mm-hmm.
it's a group or just one other person, it's so important to be able to have somebody to connect with. And when you're talking about these kids that are loners, they don't have that. So their joys are fleeting. When you can't share it with somebody, for some reason, people don't hold on to joys unless they can turn around and share it with another human being. It's kind of like it's there and it's gone before it really has any impact to uplift them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same thing when they tend to wallow a little bit more in the hardships they have because, they don't have anybody to uplift them out of it. So the connections, the friendships, the camaraderies, even casual friendships, just having somebody that you're comfortable talking to, whether it would be a counselor, you know, at one of these youth organizations, you know, or friends that you meet that you have over to your house or something, these type of relationships are incredibly important to keep them in a good place and feeling good about their lives.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And it's I wonder what's involved with that, because something you just said, and I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I wonder why that is. Why is it that if something bad happens to us, we kind of like wallow in it if we don't have anybody near us, around us, that can, like you say, lift us back out of it? We wallow in it. And yet, when something wonderful happens and we don't have anybody to share it with, so it kind of like peters out, if you will, we just forget about it. Instead, why don't we wallow in the good one and not in the bad one?
Right. Well, it is interesting that people kind of do that. But I know myself, when something good happens to me, and I'll be excited and happy about it, and then I've noticed that if I start talking about it to somebody, all of a sudden I'm getting more excited than I was initially just by repeating the incident to somebody,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when something's happened to us and we feel that it's a challenge or something stressful, the same thing happens when you start talking to somebody, is all of a sudden when you start putting the words out there and when you start describing what happened, it's almost like you're adjusting your reaction to it, and you're like calming yourself down, and you're like almost toning it down. So you're increasing the memory of the good thing, and you're almost kind of toning down the memory of something that was negative or challenging. And that's why it's always been beneficial to share with somebody, you know. And then if you can get a group of people, then the energy even goes more in each direction.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you can only share with one person, it has an amazing benefit for the individual. And that's why these kids, or like this young man is going into the Marines, you know, just to find somebody they can connect with, to talk with, and share their good and their bad days with them.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the support is a support of goodness and kindness and learning to be a really healthy, worthwhile, productive part of our world. Then the third thing.
I have to go back to something. I don't forget your third thing, but I'm thinking mm-hmm. of something. I want to just put this out there real quick. You had made a comment at the beginning about this video that you were sent.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple weeks ago when we were first starting the talk show, I had made a comment that these random acts of kindness that you see happen daily. They're not an oddity. It's who we really are as people when we're our true selves, when we're acting on our basic instinct, we really are good, kind, caring people. As a species, we really are good, okay? And
yeah.
It's astonishing to me that things like that are not newsworthy. So I'm putting a challenge out to your listeners and to anybody out there who would have the ability to do this, to start a good news program that would air, that would actually go out and find these videos and have a weekly show that would air them, so that people can see what we really are capable of. Every now and then you see these specials on TV and they show what somebody does, but they make it like it's such an exception to the rule, and it's not. Things like this, these little acts of kindness happen daily, and a very, very small act of kindness can literally change somebody's life on a dime. It doesn't take anything major. A lot of times it's just one simple act, and you've just put somebody in a totally different path than they were heading before you did it.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, and I agree with you 100%. The only thing I will say to you, and this is, you know, in this scenario, we can be, you know, the positive and the negative. Most people don't search for good news. They search for outrageous news. They search for the things that shock them it's a sad part of our makeup, but it's true. I mean, I've read countless articles about organizations that have tried to just run on really, really good news or really, really kind acts and things like that, and they don't have a big audience, and I'm not sure why, except for that it's in our personalities and in our makeup to like to be shocked, to like to hear the even the macabre. We seem to get some kind of a vicarious thrill out of hearing some of the horrible things that happen every day. Do you remember a while back the man that was, I don't even remember the drug that they said he was on, but who was eating the man's face?
Yeah, that was a horrible story.
But that was on every 10 minutes. I mean, they would interrupt.
They just kept running the story and running the story.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the media, I have mixed emotions about the media. I have seen the media do some really, really wonderful things, and I've seen the media do some things that they should be ashamed of, absolutely.
Right.
But, of course, you know, it's their job, and they're not making the news, they're reporting it, which I've heard them say a million times. However, there is a way to report it and a way to not report it, and I think we all agree with that as well. But everybody everywhere was talking about that particular video, and it was horrible. Horrible.
I mean, does
it get any more disgustingly horrible? And yet everybody, you know, everybody wanted to see it, and everybody watched it again and again and again and again. So I'm with you, Shelley. I know that that's true. I met two absolutely lovely ladies today in the flower shop when I went to get flowers for our Irene today. And we chatted for quite a long time. And I said, my grandpa used to own a greenhouse and have a flower shop, and so did his oldest son. And I always thought a florist shop would be such a wonderful place to work, surrounded by all that beauty, you know. And we talked about it for a little while, and their shop is really cute, and they made a gorgeous arrangement for Irene for us today. And both of them, the one lady is Indian, the owner. And she said she's been picked on, and her daughter got so picked on in school that she had to take her out of the school right over here. And I said, why? And she said, not because we're Indian, but because I have strict rules. And she got picked on because she wasn't allowed to date until she went to college. So the other girls made friends with her and didn't want made fun of her and didn't want to be friends with her. And I said, I can top that. I talked to a teenager this week that's being picked on because she's still a virgin and she's 15.
Oh, wow.
And I said, you know, for me, the sermon I gave my own daughter was, you know, at that time, I said, I'm 40, and there's some times that I'm not ready for the emotions and the turmoil that go with sex. So there's no way in this world a 15-year-old is ready for it.
No, absolutely
not. And yet now we're turning around a little bit. There's a lot of young girls out there that take the oath to wait until marriage and stuff like that. There's a lot of that going on in the schools. And those girls are ostracized and embarrassed to let anybody know that they're still a virgin. They will actually lie about the fact that they're – can you believe that? That we've gotten to that point?
Yeah, you can figure the other way around.
When I first understood that, I was like, what? You must be kidding me. Of course, I'm old. So for me, that seems like, oh, my gosh, you must be kidding me. But it's true. When you talk about peer pressure, it comes from every part of your world, from the way you look to the way you dress to the way you act to who your mother and father are to the house you live in to the car they drive. Everything gets critiqued. These kids have it really tough, which brings me back, and I want to get back on target because we have a couple callers. They aren't asking to speak with me. If you guys want to talk to me, you have to press in
one.
So that I know you want to talk. But The third thing, of course, is gangs. And that's why some of them go to gangs. They like the camaraderie. They like the friendship. And most importantly, the show I watched today, they like having the fear being emanated from across the room, not in their own soul.
Right, right.
They like the fact that they're making other people afraid of them. And I must have felt that at one time or another in my young life. I don't know that I feel that way anymore, feeling like I'm intimidating somebody. I usually try really hard to not intimidate somebody because I can be kind of big and brash, and I try not to be because I don't want to intimidate somebody. But I guess if you've always, always, always been the underdog, there's something good about that feeling as well. So having said that, that's why we have so many of these gangs. And, of course, you know, gangs are about being big and bad. They're not about being, you know, helping the old lady across the street. If we could get gangs like that, that would be awesome.
Right.
But that's not where they go. So I do think, though, that all of those things, it's nicest if they can join a church. If you're really feeling alone out there, and you don't know which way to turn, and I don't want to make my show about religion because I think it's a very private thing, religion. And I do think, though, if you're feeling lost and wondering if something like that can help you, talking to somebody that's involved with the church is often a very, very, very good idea for you. And secondly, if you're an older young man or young woman, and you feel disconnected and you don't know where your life is going and you're a little bit lost and none of the adults in your life are able to come up with any answers and don't know what to say to you, not because they don't want to help you, but just because they don't have the answers, you should talk to a recruiter and see what's going on. Mind you, it's not wartime. I would say to you, you'd be safe going in the service now, learning a trade, learning how to keep your stuff together, learning how to fold your clothes nicely. That's always a plus. And learn something about who you are and give you the time to get it together with hard work as pressure. But I think it would fit some of you. So there's some options in lieu of joining a gang or in lieu of doing something that's going to hurt you in the long run and hurt the people that love you.
That's right. That's right. You know, and a lot of the younger kids can actually look to start groups of their own. There was a book, I'll have to get it and give you the title on the next show, but there was a book written by I can't remember the young man's name, but he was like 12 years old when he wrote the book, and he had started this whole youth organization, and their big thing was saving animals. He was a big animal activist, and he would go around, and they would try to do things to help animals and things like that. But he had this whole, and it was all kids, and he ended up writing a book, and it was published and everything, and it just shows what you know, it doesn't matter how old you are. If you've got an idea in your head to do something, you should go for it. Because if you talk to enough people, enough adults, enough other kids, you know, you don't have to wait till you're an adult to make a difference. Children can make a difference. A lot of times they think they're not heard. A lot of times they think they're not important, or that their ideas are silly or something like that. And if there's any young people listening today, if you have a passion about something, if you feel compelled that you want to do something to make a difference, you should absolutely act on it. You should not feel that just because you're young, it's not your place or something like that. You should start sharing it with people that might be able to join in and assist you in making that particular dream come true. Because there are young people who have done amazing things and created different types of organizations all over the country and literally all over the world, as a matter of fact.
Well, how old was the kid that that came up with Facebook? Wasn't he pretty young, too? I mean, he wasn't 16 or anything, but he was very young. And today, with all these amazing electronics and everything that we have, a lot of them, I mean, every now and then I peruse through YouTube, and I see some of these things that kids have done, and they're wonderful. I have a couple, my sister's grandchildren, they're real excited about videos and stuff like that, and her one granddaughter sends me videos of her and her girlfriend singing and dancing, and they're adorable. They're really, really cute, and they do it nicely. I mean, I remember as a kid, we always put on shows for the adults and everything, and it was pretty pretty slapsticky. And but some of these things are wonderful. You know, they show real talent. And there's a lot of stuff out there available for kids to, you know, to let their imagination blossom, let the things that come from inside of them because of who they are, because we're all so different and so unique. And if something like that is coming to you and you think about it, don't give up on it. Figure out a way to start it. Figure out a way to do it. I think being able to know that you may have a gift that's, you know, like a bud inside of you someplace, and until you water it, it's not going to blossom.
Exactly.
So I think that that's important, too, for kids to think about that. Today, you know, was No Bully Day, and at most of the schools, and of course I couldn't get in to see any of them because they want me to go, and I will do that. I promise everybody. I make that promise on the air that I will go and find out what it is they want from me so that I can go in the schools and show the bully film and talk to them and listen to them even better and see if there's anything I can do to help in regard to those things. But at this point in time, they wouldn't let me. And again, all they did was wear pink shirts. That was the whole extent. Wear pink shirts.
Oh.
Matter of fact, I overheard a lady saying, they're talking to him about bullying, and you want my six-year-old boy to wear a pink shirt? What's going to happen to him today? Made me laugh, and I thought to myself, she has a real valid point there, doesn't she?
Oh, that's hilarious. Oh,
but I thought to myself, you know, what are they thinking, you know? But now my 15-year-old wears a pink shirt, no problem. You can't get in his space about his styling and all that kind of stuff, so it didn't bother him a bit. But if I'd have tried to put a pink shirt on my 6-year-old, on AJ, he would not have been happy about that.
Right, right.
And because he's not sure of the connotations of that other than pink is really a girl's color, you know.
Right.
So, but when that lady, she said that in the store, and I'm standing there and I didn't know, and I looked over and I started laughing, and I said, God, I said, you're right. I don't know what they're thinking. Very funny. Very funny. Yeah.
Wow.
So the other thing that I wanted to remind everybody about, I briefly spoke about it last night. It is Anderson Cooper, and it's 10 p.m. tomorrow night. And what it is in the movie Bully, there was one couple who lost their child. He was being bullied. He finally stuck up for himself and got suspended, and his parents came home, and he had taken his own life on their living room floor. And the parents, who are, I would say, relatively young, maybe late 30s, early 40s, and he started this big drive to stop bullying, and he's pretty much dedicated his life, and this I don't know whether you'd call it a movie or a documentary, I guess you would call it, Anderson Cooper is going to talk about it. I'm going to assume that he's going to interview this couple as well, who were totally devastated. He was their only child. And, of course, death, losing a child, is the worst thing anybody can imagine. But when you know your child took their own life, God, I can't even go there. I can't even get there. I can't imagine. I said to the two lovely ladies in the flower shop today when they were telling me about what they have experienced. The one lady has one daughter, and the other lady just told me she had nieces and nephews. So I don't know whether that meant she didn't have any children or whether she was just talking about young people that were in her life. And she said one of them is being bullied in the school that's right over here, the middle school that's right over here. And we talked about that a little bit, and I said, you know, we're all about the same age. Can you imagine 50 years ago hearing about an 11-year-old or a 10-year-old taking their own life? And they both, I mean, you could see the shocked look on their face, like they hadn't even thought about that. And I said, can you? And they both said, never. I said, because 50 years ago, I dare say a 10-year-old wouldn't have even known about taking your own life.
Right.
Am I wrong about that?
No, you're not wrong about that. It is something that the culture today, kids are feel more hopeless than they used to, and it's a lot of it is because of the family breakdown. I mean, families were tighter. There was a sense of community in the family. There's more dysfunction where there's no communication. You know, people don't, it sounds like cliche to say it, but people don't sit around the dinner table anymore at dinner time. You know, everybody,
right.
you know, that type
yeah.
of thing. So kids feel, what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, they feel a sense of loneliness where they can't be reached, or they think they can't be reached, and they give up. And 50 years ago, kids didn't give up because they didn't have that sense of isolation. And I think it's the isolation that overwhelms them. And
yeah, I think the isolation is the real dangerous part as well.
I'm sure there were kids
50. I mean, I can remember going to school with girlfriends and stuff like that, you know, would cry all the time and everything seemed to hurt their feelings and they were very sensitive and stuff. And I have a sister who's only 19 months younger than I am, that was hell on wheels when she was a little girl. If you did anything to her, she'd take a brick to you. But I don't ever remember thinking that she would ever get so mad that she'd even give any contemplation whatsoever to ending her life. I don't know whether that part has come about because of all the talk about this stuff, or because kids are seeing it and learning about it because one kid did it and then all of a sudden, you know, everybody knew about it and then another kid did it. If that's the way that it happened, it's possible, I guess.
Well, I wonder what the statistics are with kids who take their own lives and how many of them are on prescription medications. Because things like Ritalin and certain types of drugs like that are supposed to help kids calm down, when a lot of times you can just alter their diet a little bit and they wouldn't need to be on Ritalin, but a lot of people don't know that. But Ritalin mm-hmm. and different types of drugs that are used to help kids that supposedly have ADHD or ADD and things like that, which is so overdiagnosed, it's ridiculous. All right,
mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
That's a lot of depressive side effects. I mean, you hear all the time these disclaimers on the news about, you know, how certain drugs can't be given to minors because of the bad side effects unless they're under a doctor's care. And I'm just curious as to how many of these kids that do succumb to taking their own lives are on some sort of prescription medication that may be playing a role in that feeling of isolation and hopelessness.
Okay, and that answers one question. That answers the question of how they get to that point, but it doesn't answer the question is of when did it become common knowledge that you could do something to take your own life when you're only between 8 and 12 years old. I guess the point I'm trying to make is even though
well,
I knew kids... you know.
Yeah.
And I think you're right about the drugs. I also know that you and I both believe very strongly in the fact that fast foods and MSG and all of the artificial stuff that's put in the food that we eat every day. And every time I turn around, all the vegans I know and all the people I know that are trying so hard, and we find out that somebody's secretly doing something to the cucumbers that we've been making juice out of for the last 2 years, or somebody's secretly doing something to the spinach, so the spinach is poison again. You know, you and I are very much aware of what can happen with the food that we take in. And let's face it, a good majority of the families today, because everybody works. I mean, I cook every night, but I cook. I don't make everything from scratch.
Right.
That'd be a bald-faced lie if I ever said that. I mean, you know, a lot of things I make come out of a box, come out of a can, come out of this, come out of that. Do I put it together, a whole meal, like meatloaf and mashed potatoes and green beans? Yes, I do. But is it green beans from my garden and potatoes that I dug out of the ground and meatloaf from a freshly slaughtered whatever that has no chemicals in it and everything? No. I wish it was, but it isn't. So even me, in my attempt to do what I think is right and not give everybody McDonald's every night or Chef Boyardee, I'm not doing all that damn much better, if the truth be known. So if and I'm one of the few people that I know that even prepare a meal at night. A good majority of the young people I know today eat out. They eat out or they get takeout.
I know, because it's just so convenient, and they think they're getting the nutrition. It satisfies their hunger, but and then they wonder why they don't have energy, and then they have a lack of it. It always surprises me where people half my age are, like, tired all the time, you know?
Yeah.
And our physical energy plays a huge role in our emotions and vice versa.
Yes.
So if
yes.
you're physically drained because you're not getting nutrition from the food because all you eat is junk food and fast food and things like that, that will absolutely depress you emotionally. And when you're depressed emotionally, it robs you of energy. So then now you're in this vicious cycle.
Yes.
And one just keeps perpetuating the other.
Right. But again, it's all about, you know, it's all about lifestyle, and it's all about we're a world of faster and easier all the way.
Convenience.
Yes, convenience.
It's all about convenience.
Yep, and very sadly, that enters into a lot of the things that we talk about on this show. It enters into the lethargy, number one. Because if you're tired and you can't get up and get out of your own way, you get lazy, and after you get lazy, you get depressed because you're lazy, and then starts the vicious cycle. Or it creates anger because something that you're taking into your body is invoking that emotion, whether it's, who knows what it's doing internally. I'm not a scientist, a biologist, or a doctor. I play one on the radio, but I'm not. So, but I do know that you can actually watch your children. You can spend a week eating at McDonald's and Burger King and Arby's and all these, Taco Bell, whatever you want to do, and then take a week where you eat, you know, more fresh vegetables, more stuff that you think is going to be a little bit purer than the foods that have to last a really, really long time in somebody's freezer in a restaurant. Just think like that. Just think of something that has a shelf life and serve that for a week. And then see the difference in how everybody feels. I'm not asking you to give up everything. I'm not asking you to be a vegan, which is very tough. I'm not asking you to do anything way out there on the far right wing. I'm asking you to do something just very, very simple. If it's got a 10-week shelf life, don't eat it.
Exactly.
If it'll last for 3 days in your refrigerator, that's what I'd like to see you eating for a while, just for a week, and see the difference between everybody, the way everybody felt week one on fast food and week two by doing that. And just see if there's a difference in your children's behavior,
mm-hmm.
especially if they're little people. You know,
yep.
It will make a difference. It will definitely make a difference, and it will shockingly make a difference. So with all of that, you know, then we're left with when they get to be 18 and 19 and can do 17 even or 16, and they're pretty much doing their own thing for food. And if you've done all that all this time, chances are that's what they're still going to do. They're going to do convenient, which is a drive-through or whatever.
Exactly, because they've built up a habit for it.
And they actually, well, you know, I read an article one time about some of the stuff that they put in, like McDonald's French fries and stuff like that, and there were innuendos that they put stuff in it to make them habit-forming and stuff like that. And I said, the salt all by itself is habit-forming. They don't need to put anything else in it.
That's true.
You know, they really don't need to do anything else. Most people that want McDonald's French fries are craving salt.
Mm-hmm.
They're not craving the potato. They could be craving the grease a little bit, but it's more than likely the salt. And that's why they think they love McDonald's French fries, is because they're so salty. I have, I've had kids that I've taken care of in the past that I will catch them. Back in the days when you kept a sugar bowl on the table, sticking their finger in the sugar and eating the sugar, I have had kids that lick the tops of salt shakers because their bodies really crave the salt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't anymore. But when I was younger, I used to really overdo the salt because it's just, I don't know, there is something about that mineral that if you have any, I don't know what the deficiency is, but I do know that there is something that makes certain people crave that to a more of an unhealthy level. And, you know, like I said, I don't use anywhere near what I used to. I actually use something called Herbamare now, which is made with sea salt and a lot of herbs and stuff. It's very good. But I don't actually like just regular salt anymore. But there was a time in my life that I did. And I really overused it. If anybody like tried to snitch a bite off my plate, it was the last time they did. They were like, "Oh my God, you like a little food with your salt? What is going on here?"
Yeah. I know a lot of people like that, and like I said, those are all habits that are anything in excess, of course, is seldom good for you.
Right,
but I think that food and what we take in, like the first night that I started the show, I read the paper that I wrote called Heart to Heart. And I guess I'm due to read it again because there's probably a lot of people that didn't join us that first evening. But in Heart to Heart, I do talk about the nourishment that our bodies require. And part of it is food. But that's not all. Yeah, but food does play a big part in who we are, who people see us as, what our personality is like, what our temperament is like, what our overall behavior is like, has a lot to do with the kind of food that we eat. Not totally. I don't want everybody thinking that, you know, they can change themselves overnight by giving up certain food. It's not about that. It's about making better choices, wiser choices. And obviously, if something will last in a box or a can for 30 years on the shelf, it's probably not doing your body any good.
That's absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm. So
the preservatives that are put in foods to make them last, from a scientific standpoint, actually prevent the body from metabolizing the nutrients. So what's happening is when your diet is predominantly those types of packaged products that have a lot of preservatives in them, you're going to have a very nutrient deficient diet because your body, you'll be eating what are called empty calories. So you'll be eating all these calories. You might even gain weight, and yet you're going to be malnourished. So you're going to be hungry all the time, you're going to have a lack of energy, and you're also going to have episodes of what's called brain fog, because you're not going to be getting enough stimulus up to the brain, proper brain function. So it really causes a lot of different things. But you're absolutely right. The longer the shelf life is, the more not nourishing it is for your body.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's just another one of those areas when we talk about kids that are in trouble. That's just the reason I bring it up tonight, is that's one of the, when we try to look for answers, every time something needs to be fixed, or in our opinion needs to be fixed, we look for reasons. We look for, I'm not going to say excuses, but we look for the why of somebody's behavior and somebody's problems. And there's lots of things that add into it. And environment is certainly one of them. And genes is another one of them. But their food is probably a very healthy way to working on them, changing what they take in for nourishment. And the whole idea of eating food is to enforce your body and to help your body and to nourish your body. Food is not supposed to be used to just fill you up.
Right.
And very sadly, I do that. I eat until I'm stuffed if something tastes good, whether I want any more of it or not, because I love food. And I have been, I'd like to say I've been struggling with my weight all my life, but that's really not true, because a lot of times I didn't struggle with it. I just got as fat as I wanted to get, and then I'd work on it again later. So I guess that's not really as big a struggle. Somebody struggling with their weight usually is successful. So this isn't much of a struggle, evidently, because the fat has always won out for me.
Aww.
But I do believe I do. Well, everybody has their stuff, and I'm not ashamed that that's mine. And I think I could be doing things a lot worse. And I'm a mother at heart and at soul, and I comfort with food. And I comfort myself with food, but I comfort others with food as well.
Right.
I think I told the story one time of the man who called me all upset because his mother-in-law was giving pancakes to his dying wife who had cancer. And he called me crying hysterically. What is she trying to do, kill her? And I said, no, sweetheart, she's loving her. That's the only way she can figure out right now to bring her daughter some love and some comfort, and I'm not sure I wouldn't be right there pouring the syrup on for her. And I calmed him down, and he said, I guess I understand, but you and I both know that's not good for her. And I said, well, she hasn't had pancakes for 2 years and in this struggle with cancer, and is the cancer gone? And he said, no. And I said, is she surviving? And he said, no. And I said, then let her have the pancakes.
Exactly.
And he was like, okay. So, a lot of things are about that as well. And so a lot of times when a kid is not getting the kind of food that they want, that's one of the reasons. And I'm probably guilty of that with my kids. So, but again, it's just all the different things that go in to everything that we talk about. It's about changing and rearranging the way we all feel about each other, and how we do things for each other, and how we care about each other. I met with some old friends today at the funeral that I went to, and it was wonderful to see some of them.
Oh, wow.
And we talked. We talked a lot about our lives, and most of us are in our 60s. Some of us that were there today are in our late 70s, and these ladies are all still very productive members of society. All but one still works a regular job, and It was amazing. It's always amazing to be in their company because they all make me very proud to be a woman because they're all strong and capable and doing lots of things for the world and the people that they care about. Most of them are health oriented, do things in the health industry, and a lot of them are therapists and things like that. And one of them now is working at a rehab center for drug and alcohol abuse, and she said it's the most fulfilling thing she's ever done. And someday we'll get on that bandwagon as well and talk about the use of drugs for our young people. There's still a very, very large amount of teenagers that are smoking pot. And 20 years ago, I would take a real big stand against it. Now, I have mixed emotions about it when I try to pick what I think is worse or better of all the evils. And the biggest argument I can come up with when I fight with a teenager about pot is the fact that it's illegal. And now every time I pick up a newspaper, it's legal someplace else. So
The problem with pot is that it shouldn't become legal. This is part of the research that I was doing recently. And the chemicals in pot, unless it's been medically grown and it's used in particular doses for a particular malady, pot does significant damage to the connective tissues in the brain. And it's one of the reasons why people that smoke pot become overly mellow. But what it's doing is it damages memory patterns, it damages cognitive areas of the brain, so that people who have, especially young people, because their brains aren't done yet, are more mm-hmm. at risk of having some permanent cognitive damage over someone who, say, is in their, I think that the brain sheath becomes solid in your 20s, like in your early 20s. So the brain mm-hmm. is actually subject to some permanent damage into your early 20s, and that's why people should be more careful on it. This is something they should be teaching in school, and I don't know that they do. But this is one of the things that the brain does, that it attacks some of that connective tissue and can actually cause, learning difficulties, memory issues, and it can also create apathy, where they just don't mm-hmm. care about, they lose the, they don't see the significance in things that are happening around them. They're not affected by it. They're not happy mm-hmm. or sad. They just become, they're kind of like
indifferent.
There.
Mm-hmm.
Indifferent, mm-hmm. perfect word.
Yeah, indifferent, yeah. Well, and I've seen that. I must tell you, I've seen that, and I can't absolutely positively say that's the reason, but one of the things that I've seen in many teenagers is indifference. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I do believe that it's caused synthetically, but other times I believe it's caused in other ways, because mm-hmm. of the way life has treated them, they've become indifferent. But that's a whole other
right.
conversation that we will have one day, and maybe we can get some real facts. I'll do some more research on that, and I know you've got some paperwork to give to me that I can read and try to absorb in this feeble cerebellum and see what I can get out of it. And I think
you're a smart cookie. Don't go there.
Yeah. An oatmeal raisin with lots of nuts.
I love it.
But I think it would be beneficial for a lot of people to understand a little bit more about this, because we don't always get the straight answers. With the media or with people that have an agenda.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So it would be good to get some research that we can really share with people, because I do think that's another part of the mishmash that happens with a young person in the home. Because if mom and dad smoked pot when they were teenagers, which is entirely likely with today's, the age where we're at now. If you're 40 and you have a 16 through 18, 20-year-old kid, and you found out they're smoking pot, chances are you might still be smoking pot. And they know that, and that's what they're going by. So then what do you say to them? You know, somewhere deep inside, because every person I've ever talked to who does smoke pot says, no, I don't want my kid to smoke pot. Why? You think it's all right for you. Why don't you want them to smoke pot?
Right,
and
exactly.
They really don't. They don't have good answers for you. But again, I don't think the information that's out there, the general information. Let's put it that way. The general information that's fed to the public is not great enough to really. I can't put up a good fight against it with what's out there.
Exactly.
With what's out there for me to fight with, I lose the battle with the kids, because they look at me and say, what do you think's better? You know, somebody getting in their car and driving after they just drank a 12-pack at the local bar, or somebody who has a couple joints and drives their car? And the truth of the matter is, I'd much rather see them have a couple joints before they get behind the wheel. I'd rather see them straight. But if those are my two choices, that would be what I chose. So
I think they're the same, to be honest with you, between you and I. I mean, I know that you don't see it that way. But as far as I'm concerned, it's not a matter of choosing the lesser of two evils. It's the matter of they're both inappropriate. So
well,
next time they ask you that question, answer them that way. It's both inappropriate. It's not one is better than the other.
Absolutely. I do. That's what I do say. But I'm telling
because when you've had a couple of joints, your reflex time is so dulled. That's one of the things it does to you. You might as well be drunk. Okay, so you're not swerving all over the road. You might be in the right lane doing 20 and a 40-mile-an-hour speed limit, but that's dangerous also.
Well, I'm not taken away from that. And I agree with you. I don't want them to do either one. But you understand that when you're having an argument, you have to be able to look at every side of an argument. Otherwise, it's not an argument. It's just a lecture that you're giving to a kid. So if you're gonna talk to the kid, you've got to be prepared for what they're gonna say back. And this is what they say back.
Right.
So when you look at them and you say they say that to you, and I have seen people that work all day smoking weed. I've seen it, especially in the restaurant industry. And I've also worked in the restaurant industry. You know that I'm drug-free and have been drug-free my whole life. I've never imbibed on a joint. I've never snorted cocaine. I've never done anything like any of those things. I've done my share of drinking. I'm an Irish Catholic, and we drink at everything, like I've mentioned before. But I never did any kind of drug, so it's hard for me to really judge on a level playing ground, I guess. But this is from observation and observing. But I've also seen people who are functioning alcoholics who can have drinks all day long while they're performing their tasks. So everything and everybody is different. And we've talked about that on this show, that we're all such individuals. What hurts one person doesn't hurt another person at all. Because, he or she just handles it. Whereas somebody else, so you couldn't say cut and dried, which is better, for sure, because for you, it might be, there are times in my life when I've had too many Excedrin and probably shouldn't have been driving, if the truth be known.
Of course.
Honest to God, because I get too anxious and everything. If I take like 3 or 4 Excedrin because I have a bad headache, I get very high strung. And I probably shouldn't be driving then, if the truth be told.
Right.
So everybody's different. And I think all of our children are different. And I think that each child has to be handled with a sense of individuality by the people that are in charge of them. And to say that you can have a blanket answer for any of the problems that we discuss on this show is ludicrous. And I would never do that. But the reason we talk about so many things is so maybe one of them fits you. Maybe one of them will suit your scenario. And it, as we've said many times, keeping your mind open and your arms open, you don't miss too much. But if you walk around with your mind closed and your arms folded in front of you, you're not going to catch a damn thing.
Exactly.
So, maybe a case of loneliness. So thank you, my darling. And I'm glad John joined us for a while tonight, but he left us. He might still be listening at home, but he's not on my on my switchboard here anymore. And to all of you that joined us tonight, I love you and see you next time. Good night, Miss Shelley.
All right. Good night, all.